I'll call to order the meeting of the Safety and Security Committee. I note we have a quorum of the committee and representation from each jurisdiction. If I could have a motion to approve the agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we have the minutes of the prior meeting for approval.
Move approval.
Move approval. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we have had our safety briefing, so we're ready to move into the agenda. We have two items, both information items for this morning. At the end of the meeting, Jim Dougherty will provide a year-end review of our safety progress. But before we do that, I want to recognize Jim Benton, who is here to present the... Can we have order in the room, please? He's here to present the quarterly report from the Tri-State Oversight Committee. After he's finished, we will hear from Jim Dougherty, and I expect we will also hear from... the CEO, with respect to any issues, particularly Silver Line issues that are raised in the talk report. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Banner. We're here with our quarterly update for the WMATA board members. And starting out with, on the next slide, the general summary of our presentation here. And our continuing effort to monitor the investigative and address findings of the Anacostia self-evacuation and formal approval of the 2013 System Safety Program Plan WMATA has submitted to us, and we reviewed and formally approved it. The corrective action plan progress. Talk participation in the Silver Line and 7,000 rail car activities, and to discuss our ongoing triennial review approach we've been in contact with WMATA about. Next slide on the proactive safety plan program that WMATA continues to have here to focus on system safety program plan. And we've been a part of this safety measurement system and the data collection system regarding hazards and the ongoing activities at WMATA concerning the safety measurement development. And we had a meeting on February 20th with the FTA to discuss the improvements made. Compliance with the TOC notification reporting deadlines. And accidents and continues to be not a problem. It's in compliance, and we get notified on all incidents and accidents that occur here at WMATA. Movement to a system of departmental specific capture meetings. We are currently trying to increase participation in the CAP meetings and put a higher level focus on these CAP meetings at the departmental level. Try to increase the production here. And we'll go into that a little bit more when we talk about the new database that we've been working together with. Accident, incidents, and hazards. At the end of the year, there was a real good, strong push to ensure that these accidents, incidents get approvals and final reports get closed out and adopted by the TOC. And we're very happy with the progress on the accident incidents reports. The backlog has significantly decreased from the last board presentation. And WMATA continues to respond in a timely manner to TOC reviews and comments on accident reporting material, as you'll see as we continue on. Anacostia self-evacuation, I think, is a prime example of that. Although this was the second self-evacuation of a train by passengers in the past year, and then these types of incidents are very concerning, not only to the Tri-State Oversight, but also to the WMATA Safety Department. These reach high-level activities. FTA was involved. They came in, and we all had lots of questions that WMATA was forthcoming and transparent in answering. And we appreciate the continued transparency that they show the Tri-State Oversight Safety Oversight Community. TOC believes WMATA is taking appropriate steps and to identify the root causes of these types of incidents and continue to make improvements. The internal audits, currently scheduled coming up, public relations in March, procurement in April, storerooms and logistics also in April. These are currently scheduled, and we can talk about this a little bit more in the when we talk about the new proposal to do a triennial in an ongoing fashion, which will be coming up later in the presentation.
Excuse me, okay, just to clarify, these are WMATA audits, but you have the results available to you? And
these are WMATA internal audits, and thank you, Jim. And we participate in these audits to get a better understanding of the day-to-day activities of these departments. And it helps us when we review their incident investigations so that we can ensure that we're in the same mindset, that we know what they're talking about. So we acquire a lot of knowledge through these internal audit processes. WMATA internal security audits. Back in October, WMATA asked us to accept the Transit Security Administration base review audit as a substitute for the internal security audits, and we tried to get formal guidance from the FTA regarding this request, and the FTA really has given us a little bit of conflicting information, but there's been no formal guidance, so at this time we're going to be asking WMATA to provide that formal guidance from the FTA, and if not, we will be sending out a letter asking them to perform the internal security audits starting in April. Corrective action plans. As of March 1st, there are 117 open caps. 15 caps have been closed so far this year, and 5 more remain under review. Since this presentation has been written, we have received additional corrective action plan actions taken and that are under TOC review. And also completing a new cap track mechanism, which we will show you here shortly and coming up in the presentation. Next section, open by caps by department. One thing I want to point out here is many of these caps are assigned to multiple departments, so the total here may not add up to the 117 open caps. Under the new style tracking mechanism, one of the concerns from WMATA departments was they really were, their portion of the corrective action plan may be closed out, but they're not really getting credit for it. So hopefully with the new tracking mechanism, we'll be able to see that that's also achieved. The next slide, new cap tracking mechanism. We're switching from an Excel spreadsheet to an Access database. We hope to be able to make friendlier reports that will be more easily read by your bigger type is a big issue. The presentation here may not show the full exploit the benefit of it because it is a snapshot, it's a screenshot, so it may not come up as clear as it would if it was actually a direct printout from the report itself. So this transition will allow TOC to track the completion interim milestones. They will more easily sort information related to outstanding caps, approaching deadlines, cap history, track individual departments' work in completing caps, and involve collaboration by multiple departments. Capture a wider range of information, yet develop targeted reports tailored to a specific audience, such as yourselves or ourselves or our executive leaders. And you'll see two different style reports coming up. draft format we presented to the FTA on February 20th, and we're awaiting their comments and concerns. We should have that in the next week or so. This is one report, and as I said, it doesn't really do justice as what the actual printout would look like, but instead of on a 8x14 sheet, it'll be on 8.5x11. However, instead of one row across, you could have multiple layers so that it would be able to increase the font without having the 8x14 or 11x17 sheets of paper. This could be tailored to have any kind of information that you want on this report. For instance, the impediments to completion. I know there was a report sent out recently with the 30 top caps, and we could tailor our reports to emulate that type of report at a push of a button instead of assigning multiple people to compile all this information. This would be a full-page report for each corrective action. So, therefore, if you wanted to hone in on one specific corrective action, you could see the milestones that were occurring, whether the milestone was completed, how many milestones it had, and different types of information. We currently have the old information that we currently have in this, and in a lot of cases, that information will have to be branched out so that we can generate the milestones from that information, and we're currently undertaking that. Next slide. TOC continues to be involved in overseeing safety and security aspects of the 7000 series railcar projects and the Silver Line capital projects, attending the safety certification working groups, performing some of the walk downs out on the Silver Line, getting ready for their pre-revenue service assessment. TOC is aware of two incidents this month involving Dulles test trains. One was a near miss on February 5th where two workers were, one worker was injured trying to hurry himself out of the way of an oncoming train. And the other one was track damage occurred when a wheel axle locked up and the flange broke off some cabling on the signaling system out on the Orange Line. Next slide. Triennial reviews, as I said, we're revising the way we do our triennial review. Instead of trying to accomplish this monstrous feat all at one time in a month-long period, we're going to stretch that out over to throughout 3 years. We can review documentation a little bit better that way, get prepared for our interviews with the organization, as well as do the field visits and the site. We may be able to do multiple sites on each element versus trying to accomplish this all at one given time. 49 CFR Part 659 does permit this type of audit. It permits it all at once or as an ongoing 3-year period. It does happen this way throughout the country in addition to all at once, and most of the people that have transitioned to this point find it very favorable that it's an ongoing process, not a once every 3-year burden. So I think it will be a positive thing. Slide. Trying to review, TOC will continue to work with WMATA to ensure the development of an efficient and effective oversight process. And we do believe this new style will not only be more efficient, but also more effective at the same time. And any questions and concerns?
No. Thank you for the report. I certainly think it shows a lot of progress in where we're going. I had one question, and I'll recognize. On the triennials, I assume you'll be working with Metro staff to find the appropriate time that fits with their schedules, and over a 3-year period, there ought to be some window in which each of them would be ready and willing to work.
We have it broken down into 21 different elements, and we have like a 3-month window that we can fit it in, and make sure that, and that's one thing about doing it over a three-year period, you have that flexibility. So if staff is on vacation, you know, a lot of times you, if they're on vacation, you ask the wrong questions to the wrong people or the right questions to the wrong people or, you know, whatever the combination is. But you can make sure that, that all the parties that need to be present are present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sort of breezed over the self-evacuation on the Anacostia incident. You know, that we received a pretty thorough investigation from the tax perspective. Could you shed some more light on that phenomenal event and what your further recommendations should be about that kind of an event from your perspective?
Well, as I said, this was the second self-evacuation in the past year, and the first one was clearly had different circumstances where the loss of power was due to a storm, and at that point there was the recommendation that emergency personnel would be dispatched within 5 minutes of a power loss, and that did occur in the second incident. And the location of the train, I think it shows the complexity that, that can occur from each different type of event. And I believe that through the recommendations that were made from the MTPP and the Safe Department on this incident, I think it's looking like it's going in the right direction to make sure that, that even this type of event, as hard as it would be to avoid, could be avoided through training and drills to ensure that in the case of a power loss and a crush load train, that, that these style incidents are resolved quickly, knowing that, that I know when it's a crush load train, sometimes when I'm on it, even when the air conditioning's running, I feel, you know, confined and a little bit of anxiety because it is so crowded on those trains. And, you know, I guess some people that may have claustrophobia or who knows what, it, it is concerning that these type of incidents happen. And I believe, with the, like I said, as the training and the drills occur, they'll get resolved as quickly as possible.
I think all of us have to continually communicate to the public that they are a lot safer staying on the train than going anywhere else.
Absolutely. I think education to the public will come out, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You indicated that TOC has been involved in the 7,000 series planning, and maybe this is a question for both you and Jim. In what respects do you think the new cars will be safer? We all know that automobiles, each new generation, they get safer and safer. In what respect will the new Metro cars be safer for our passengers?
I'd say the engineering technology that's going into them will make them not only more crash-worthy, but operational-wise, they will have secondary systems that will avoid operators from making human errors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question really is more of a broad question. It really is related to the question that you posed, Mr. Chairman, in terms of the alignment of resources with the audits that are going on. And I commend you for taking the approach to align, to take the triennial review as an ongoing process and aligning with other types of activities that are going on here. I think that's very helpful. It strikes me that in line with what the chairman was describing, the audits are necessary and important. They also are a resource drain as well in terms of staff supporting the execution of those audits and quickly responding to requests for documentation and those kinds of activities. And I think that, and really maybe it's a question for the chair or maybe an observation, is it would be helpful, I believe, from a board perspective, to really, if we had a matrix of the types of audits that go on, because certainly there are the audits that your agency, your oversight goes through, our own Inspector General. There are audits, a series of audits that occur. There is our annual audit. There are in federal agencies that have audits also, and I think it will be helpful for the board to at least have a matrix and an understanding of those audits that are going on to be able to at least see what kinds of impacts they have. They're necessary and important, but I know that they do create a drain for the agency itself, and I'd like to be aware of that.
And we certainly can provide that, a list of the safety audits that are ongoing. One of the concerns here, which we worked together on, was to make sure that there was a economic use of our resources, yep, and I have to respond to this. And, you know, Jim was kind enough to share the work plan ahead of time, and we went through that and meshed it with our own work plan for the internal safety audit, so we didn't come back to Rob Troop, you know, every 6 months asking questions about the same subject area, do at the same time independent questions, you know, and that sort of thing, but at least Rob then and his group can respond to that at one time. So we try to take that in. And starting out with the work plan, discussing some issues through it, getting through it, I think we ended up in a good place.
Thank you. And then I just want to...
This is always a problem for agencies that have multiple oversight, but if you can deconflict the schedules, you can actually get the benefit of working through with them.
And reliance upon one set of data for another source of requirements. The last one is a specific question. I did not fully understand on slide 12 or page 12, where we describe internal audits. The last bullet that describes WMATA internal security audits and the issue around base and FTA, I did not understand that that dialogue. What's happening there? What is the objective? What is the issue, and what is the expected outcome of the process? Please talk a little bit more about that.
Under 49 CFR Part 659, and under the MOU, the WMATA TAC MOU, that there's a requirement for an internal security audit. And as you said, there's so many audits that we do try to achieve multiple things, ways. And one of the ways is to accept the TSA base review, which audits the WMATA system, as an internal security audit requirement for the FTA program. Mm-hmm. Some of the conflicting information we have been getting is, while the TSA base review only covers certain elements of the internal security audit requirements, it doesn't require it. It's more on a terrorist type activity audit versus a the safety security side audit. So now the chief came up here, and I'd like the chief to be able to talk about that. That would be great.
Sure. Good morning. The FTA and the Transportation Security Administration have been working for the last 4 or 5 years to look at reducing audit fatigue by federal agencies. And one of those things, looking at 659, was to look at the components and looking at the base, the assessment that TSA is doing, to look at those areas that is satisfying 659 requirements. And so they have a base review plan that's going on now, and we feel real confident, because it's not just us, it's all transit agencies that have rail, that we will get to the resolution that pretty much 95% of everything that's in 659 relative to security will be accomplished by the base. And so we are working in concert with FTA to get that final thing in writing to say to the respective tri-state oversight agencies or other state oversight agencies, of which there are 27 across the country, that is acceptable. And so we are awaiting. There has been some leadership change at FTA in the Office of Safety, and so we're sort of anticipating that response letter back to the TOC and to other state safety oversight agencies will be forthcoming, and that we will satisfactorily accomplish what was requested.
If I can help with FTA, I'd be happy to do that. They are schizophrenic. They're in the security business, and they're not in the security business, and they're not quite sure, as you know, how to manage that. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you.
A comment about the Silver Line. My experience is that the most safety-vulnerable rail operating environment is always opening new territory. It's having contractors on the property. It's good. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to.
Thank you. To some extent, yes, through the tracks committee meetings, and they have. Truthfully, it's my feeling that they're watching WMATA, and the rest of the country will be doing what WMATA's already doing. So, I think that's good news.
Good for them.
All right.
Thank you.
Same question to Jim. Is FTA working with your office more at the grassroots level on some of the implementation of their safety standard?
Currently, we're still following.
Okay.
I'm sorry
about that.
I'm sorry.
The Jim in the dark suit with glasses.
I'm glad. Thank you.
I would say yes, but I have the honor and privilege of serving as a member of the TRACS, or the Transit Rail Advisory Committee on Safety. So I'm very, very much involved, you know, in the formulation of the MAP 21 as it applies to safety, and serve on multiple subcommittees of the committee. In fact, it looks like WMATA will probably be hosting the TRACS committee in June here. So very involved, I can say, from our side. Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Downey. Good morning, members of the board. First, I'd like to certainly recognize and thank TALK Chair Benton for his briefing this morning and the TALK's continued assistance. We do work frequently with the TALK pretty much on a daily basis. As you know, all of us are committed to making Metro safer for our employees and customers, and we have made positive gains over the last couple of years. But as I have stated before, our goal always has to be zero. Zero accidents, zero injuries, zero fatalities. So we certainly appreciate the help that we receive. Today I have the distinct pleasure to present the safety report for calendar year 2012. And as I'll note that this is a requirement of the System Safety Program Plan, and even comment the audits that you heard about, the System Safety Program Plan is designed around the elements of the audit, the 21 elements that must be conducted both internally but then also reviewed by the State Safety Oversight Committee, and we do prepare an annual report that actually lays that out also. But I just want to say that we have been working to, and I think are gaining great success, embedding a safety culture throughout the agency. It's evident from our most recent employee survey, the recent FTA audits, comments from the TALK, to a renewed interest from peers around the country looking to Metro for innovative approaches to safety practices and processes. I don't think a week goes by that we're not asked what we're doing or for copies of our various programs that are moving forward. And as Mr. Sarles is often fond of saying, what gets measured gets managed. So it bears repeating that our two established key performance indicators, customer and employee injuries, have not only met their target for 2012, but have exceeded it. For 2012, the employee injury rate, the employee injury rate was 3% lower than last year's rate of 5.19 injuries per 200,000 work hours, and below the target of less than 5.3. As a side note, the Bureau of Labor Statistics transportation sector is reported at 5.0 injuries per 200,000 work hours. For customer injuries, the news is even better, as we're below last year's rate of 1.7 injuries per million passengers, or a 10% reduction, achieving our target of being less than 1.9 injuries per million passengers. We've actually looked and done even an informal sampling of other transit agencies, and their injury rates reflect an average of about 2.6 injuries per million passengers. And before I briefly highlight some of the safety accomplishments of the last year, let me say that this is not the work of one person or just a safety staff, but truly a changing of the work culture at every level of the company, from the mechanics, the operators, managers, administration, the executive leadership, and you, our board. All of you make my responsibilities a tad bit lighter by embracing safety as a primary mission of the authority, and for that, I thank you and appreciate all the work that everybody puts into enhancing safety. Over the next couple of slides, we're going to talk about, you know, some of the various accomplishments that have been made, which starts with closing all of the 2000 FTA audit findings that were noted previously. And as you know, we just had this most recent audit in August, which the FTA actually reviewed and updated all the activity that has been done and basically reiterated just that we have accomplished all the work that we had set out to do. So we were recognized for that. The FTA also recognized and highlighted is the closure of over 300 open accident investigations, of which 102 were closed in 2012, which today brings us current with all of the open accidents that were open prior to 2010, which we're working greatly to achieve, and we've done that. As far as the NTSB recommendations, we've worked to close many of those, and 7 have been formally closed, 13. We're waiting for the NTSB to respond back, and we have a few more that have been submitted actually recently, so we basically have been working feverishly to get these all closed out from the NTSB's perspective. Our corrective action plans, or CATs, that have been generated from many sources, from external ones such as the NTSB or the FTA recommendations, to the internal ones that have been created by our own internal safety audits that we've talked about, also have been worked to close out several of those. Not that far in the past, the majority of the CAPs were externally generated. Currently, over 30% of all new CAPs are internally generated as we continue to strengthen our safety audit program that Mr. Ventnor even mentioned. In 2012, CAPs were generated from internal sources, and a grand total of 128 corrective actions were closed for an average of 11 per month, which, by the way, exceeds the general manager's target of 10 per month. So we're constantly working to identify as well as we work to close any of the corrective actions. Another measurable item that I'd like to share is our employee confidential safety hotline, which has been active since 2011, which is available to all employees 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with the ability to speak with a safety officer. This past year, we received over 1,500 calls, and these were logged, and of those, 230 we provided field responses to. And this is whether the calls come, from the hotline or the employees use the web access. They have the option certainly of doing that or calling us to report any concern. All of these are logged and tracked, and over 85% of those are closed within 5 business days. So we do actually work. And these would include such things as any interior doors malfunctioning, improper personal protective equipment, work procedures, work walking surfaces, housekeeping, and several others. This past year, our 6 internal safety audits have been completed, and we're now current with our 3-year cycle of internal safety audits as required by the System Safety Program Plan. As a side note, both the FTA and the COC have expressed their gratitude for the thoroughness and completeness of these important safety audits. Our employee safety training courses and curriculum development has been a vital part of our cultural change here at WMATA, and I'd like to highlight some progress this past year. One of them is the Safety Department's review of over 1,900 job descriptions that we've then grouped and analyzed, training profiles for positions that were developed in regards to required occupational safety. This allows managers to see what safety classes may be required for their various position types. And that's a chance that we have several job descriptions. We've updated our safety training courses and produce a semi-annual training catalog as well as a monthly calendar of training opportunities. Staff not only teaches classroom, but in 2012 began conducting field training at facilities on all shifts, and this has been a huge success. And of course, we coordinated and administered the safety training conducted from external sources, such as the U.S.'s Department of Transportation's Transportation Safety Institute, or TSI, in which we had six of these week-long classes through 2012. In 2012, staff conducted 213 safety training classes, reaching 5,384 employees in topics ranging from CPR, or cardiopulmonary resuscitation, automatic external defibrillator, AED, to incident investigations, body mechanics, OSHA compliance, just to name a few. And even at this time, we would extend the opportunity to any board member that desires to attend AED CPR training and become certified, because you never know whose life you may have the opportunity to save. So I wanted to extend that to you. On our own, our safety staff continues their professional development, as we now have two employees that have recently passed an extensive exam proving their proficiency and are certified safety professionals, and another as a certified industrial hygienist. The majority of the safety staff has earned the FTA-sponsored Transit Safety Institute's Safety and Security Program Certificate, and at the end of last year, six employees passed the American Society of Quality certification also. To date, the overall safety staff represent over 30 different degree disciplines, averaging almost 15 years of transit experience, plus three certified safety professionals, three professional engineers, one certified industrial hygienist, and several staff members with either former military or rail experience. And in previous years, several of our safety staff were certified through the World Safety Organization's safety specialist or certified safety and security directors. The authority is continuing to implement its confidential close call reporting program, and the purpose of this is similar to the one utilized by the Federal Railroad Administration's confidential close call reporting program. And certainly it's not all about technical experience, inspections, compliance, or oversight that constitutes a successful safety program. It also takes process improvements and accurate data. In 2012, we continued to strengthen and enhance our data and analyze capabilities with the rollout of hazard management modules as part of the overall safety measurement system. As a reminder, our SMS is a centralized database of all incidents and accidents that began late in 2009 and allows not only storage of information that better facilitates data analysis used throughout the authority. It has garnered interest not only from other transit properties, but also the FTA. One offshoot of this analysis is the late fall rollout of our SafeStat program, which is similar to ComStat that you may be aware of from various police agencies. We continue to strengthen our presence throughout the agency from the safety committee structure, including the local safety committees, from two safety officers being on call 24/7 to geographically assigning safety officers to field locations and deployment of staff to all major projects, including over 40 weekend shutdowns, shift work, and even periodic rotational officers to remove the probability of complacency. In conjunction with the operations group and support offices, safety department plays an active role in the required safety certification of all federally funded projects like the Silver Line and the 7000 series cars. On our environmental front, we continue to be in overall compliance with the local jurisdictions in which we serve and the federal requirements to meet our attempt to making Metro greener. Also during 2012, we began to tackle an issue facing all modes of transportation and workers that you're aware of, which is our fatigue program. As discussed with the committee in earlier meetings, WMATA is taking an agency-wide approach to reducing fatigue opportunities. Currently, we continue our engagement with leading consultants in this subject area to determine optimum employee work schedules. We will come back to the committee later this year with an update. And in closing, I'd like to thank the many people that we have made measurable and considerable progress in planting and nurturing a world-class safety culture at Metro. But as stated in the most recent FTA final audit report, it is currently a fragile foundation that has taken root to date. Our continued momentum will rely on the sustained support and further development of the programs and processes taking place at every level of the authority. And Chairman Downey and members, this concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. I have questions for him, and then I'll recognize Mr. Downs with his observation or question. Mr. Giancola.
Thank you for the report. One question popped out in my mind when I went through some of the exhibits, and that was the bus collisions for revenue and non-revenue. It seems to be going in the wrong directions. Has there been some analysis as well as some recommendations for changes that have been made?
Certainly, and that's part of our Safe Staff program, where we're looking at deploying the resources. We're working with the bus operations group closely, reviewing the drive cam clips for not only the negative but the positive that we can find from that, and exercising those training opportunities. And through the Safe Staff program, it gives us a greater focus in looking at these incidents, looking at any anomalies and anything alike. One of the things that I think you'll see that with the tools that we have available today, our preventability rate is going up because we actually have better information, and that enables us to focus more on these incidents.
Yes, Mr. Nichols.
Thank you. First, thank you for the report. It's excellent. I appreciate it. I actually have three questions, and one is, actually two of them are related to kind of infrastructure. The safety team is, well, safety is everybody's business, certainly, and that's part of the success of the training. But what is our safety team itself, those folks that are actually part of our core team that is about the business of the safety business? What does that constitute? And then obviously there are officers and others within the group, but what does that mean?
What's that? The safety department currently has a budgeted staff of 61 individuals. We do have a couple vacancies that we're filling. And we've broken the safety department into groups where we have occupational safety and health, or what I call inside the walls of the facility. And on our operations side, we have bus safety officers, rail safety officers, and then also the bus group working with the Metro Access group. We have the environmental management group that reviews and works with everyone to maintain environmental compliance with the rules, as well as corporate quality assurance.
Okay.
I know that's the way we're broken down, you know, as a department, and we conduct training, we do audits, we do reviews, we watch, you know, we promote safety awareness for customers, for employees, everything from, you know, posters, working intimately at a safety committee level as things are brought up, reviewing those safety hotline calls that I told you about that folks can remain confidential. So it's certainly keeping awareness on the forefront and trying to avoid complacency, you know, out in the agency, to keep everybody pretty much alert, on their toes, well-informed, trained, and then investigate accidents or incidents where now we're looking at a close call level to avoid the more serious events.
I'd just like to add to that, and you acknowledge it, the first responsibility for safety is our frontline people. In Rob's group, they're the ones most responsible for safety, they do the job right every day. The safety department consults with them, aids them, as well as does compliance checks. But the responsibility or the training has to be done is on the front lines and all the way up through the organization. That's where the most important responsibility is for safety.
Well, and actually, that part of Jim's response and yours too kind of triggers the other two questions I have. And I, first off, completely agree with that in terms of changing the overall culture of safety. But two things stood out to me. One is we said that in the employee survey, 80% of our employees felt that they were adequately trained. And I presume that meant from a safety perspective in terms of their job, which is great. But it also said to me that 20% of our employees did not feel adequately trained. And what do we take away from that, and do those employees cluster in a given aspect of our business? Or I'd like to hear a little bit more about what that number means and how we develop a strategy around that. And then the last one is just an observation, which I'll pack all my questions into one, Mr. Chairman. And it is, I'm in an audit mode this morning, so please forgive me, but we use the term audit a lot. it is a part of our vernacular that is just constantly there and there, and we've talked a little bit about it. But I want to ask that we, what does audit mean in your world? When someone says audit, something pops into my mind as to what an audit means. And when we use the term audit, what does that exactly mean in terms of performance? And I would just like to ask that, to the extent that we, and probably is already the case, when we use audit in terms of all of our discussions, that we're talking about the same thing in terms of regardless of who's doing it. So it's a lot of a broad question, but specifically for you, what does that mean?
Okay, well, let me jump back to certain your safety training. We actually discussed the safety training, the training that's been accomplished at the Executive Safety Committee level. Mr. Sarles supports that and asked the, you know, the various groups to work with us to ensure that folks are trained. So as we're working to let the folks know what training is available, what they should be taking for their training, and then going out to their shift, to their facility, whatever it takes to afford them the opportunity to attend that training. So we are working to always get to all employees to provide, you know, the necessary training for them within the safety environment that we do. As far as
that 20% that express that they don't feel adequately trained, what does that say to us about, does it bring, is there anything strategic about that that influences our business plan?
From our perspective, we're just trying, you know, we get out more to promote, and then we're working to find out why. I don't have the exact, I can't tell you the group, I don't know specifically what it is.
Let me help
respond to that.
Yep.
This is part of an employee engagement survey which looked at safety in a lot of other areas. As part of the work performance plan for each of the ELT this year, they are looking at where there are areas of improvement, whether it's safety or other areas, and what action plans are putting together. So if it's in Rob's area, if there was identified as an issue there, as part of his work plan, performance plan for this year, he will identify what actions he should be taking. He may have to reach out to safety to provide some consultant advice. But this goes for the entire employee engagement survey. It's just not the safety area. It's other areas as well. So each one has to come back to me now that they've had the opportunity to look at a breakdown for their own department of where there were areas of concern, to talk about what is the plan going forward to make improvements in those areas. And safety would be one of them, if it applies to a particular department.
Okay, so the 20% is not 20% of our employees who feel that they are not adequately trained. Did I misinterpret that comment? And to the extent that they were, is there any correlation between that 20% that say they're not trained in any of our injury rates, which I commend you that they're going down, the whole team, not just you, but the whole team. I appreciate that. Just thinking through that data, that's the question. Does that tell us anything?
You know, there's the multiple, you know, various training. We focus on the overall safety training component,
right,
but actual job functionality training is another group, and I can certainly check, but I believe that 20% is for all training in the agency.
And the 80% was a much better number than the last time we did this survey, if I recall.
Yeah, so it's shown significant progress, and we know we always have to work to get better. And if I, you know, as far as your audit from ours, we are required to do audits in accordance with what we affectionately refer to as the 49 CFR 659 rule of the elements of the System Safety Program Plan. We're required to have certain elements, then we're required to audit ourselves to those elements. And the audit is, are we doing what we say we're doing? Do we have the, you know, the required procedures, protocols, training is all in place? We just, it's a cross-check to actually see, are we doing what we say we're doing? And that's specifically with the internal safety audit process.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty, and I appreciate that report, and I appreciate the progress that we're making. Looking at some of the backup materials, the detailed charts on the injury rates, it struck me that looking at passenger injury rates and comparing Metro Access to bus, which is the most comparable one, Metro Access per trip injury rates are about 10 times what they are about on per trip for bus passengers. Is there a reason for that enormous differential? They've been getting a little better. For 2012, they're only 7 times. But do we have a reason why the Metro Access passenger injury rates are so much higher?
I can tell you that it's a different, you know, the folks that Metro Access serves, you know, is certainly a different clientele, as well as they don't carry the same number of passengers that we carry on our bus system, that since it's based on a number of passengers carried, you know, rate. And that's where we do work with Metro Access to work on that. And they've actually been showing, you know, great improvement from where they were. If you look at 2010, at 29 injuries per million trips, or 29.82, to 14.15 currently today. Now, I know on the bus side, we're at 2.22. However, the bus folks are carrying a lot more folks, you know, versus the Metro Access folks, and we provide the door-to-door service for the Metro Access folks that, you know, there's just, I would say, a greater opportunity for an injury to occur based on the kind of service that's being provided.
I
understand the nature of the customer, but they also get more assistance than the bus passengers do, and you have some vulnerable bus passengers too. I just wonder if you could. Part of my concern is that the entity providing the services is quite different. We directly provide the bus service, and Metro Access provides it through a contractor. Is there a concern that we have less control over the safety of the contractors than we do over our own employees?
Well, we do have, you know, less control. However, we are actively involved in working with them, and Christian Kent's group also, you know, monitors, you know, a lot of the activity. And now this year we've even started responding, we, the WMATA Safety Department, to, you know, some of the Metro Access incidents that occur. And so we're looking at that to actually continue to improve.
And the new contract that we're talking about, would that affect any of our control over some of these issues?
I would have to say that it may. We expect that it will. We've been working with the Metro Access folks to actually look at what of WMATA policies should be, you know, actually required from our contractors also.
Yeah. One of the things in the business model, if you might recall, is that we have a separate quality assurance function in the new business model as opposed to the current one.
Well, and that should certainly be a positive, but it would be nice if we could also continue to follow up. It sounds like you've already got some, you're already working in that direction. I think it would be great if we could continue that progress.
Absolutely, we are. And we're even pleased that they've cut their rate in half in 3 years.
We're running a little behind, but let me recognize Mayor Ewell and then Mr. Downs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is certainly an outstanding report. What's not shown here, and we're going to be getting to the finances later on, is how does all this translate to dollars savings, cost savings? Because, you know, the reality of having a safe work environment simply means that that's less, hopefully less workman's comp injuries. That means that there's, you know, premiums or the cost for workman's comp insurance and other benefits certainly go, you know, should be relative and would go down, you know, accordingly. So if you have the answer now, fine. If not, we can do it, talk about when we get to the.
When we do our litigation report, you see that off the top of my head, as I recall, and there's a lag time involved. I believe that you'll see a decrease. The other aspect of this, we use the drive cam, obviously, on Metro Access vehicles and the buses, is that while it's primarily for training, that also sorts out the facts from the fiction on claims outside of workman's comp from the public and that sort of thing, which we think we're beginning to see a trend there, too.
Mr. Downs.
Again, my apologies for having missed the first part of the meeting. The point about Silver Line opening, new territory for railroad is traditionally the highest vulnerability about safety issues. Contractors on the property, test trains, new train control configurations, communication issues, and one way of dealing with that is to have a special safety plan for the opening of new territory and to continue it for, say, 6 months afterwards until things become part of the normal overall routine of the agency. And the question, I guess, is there a special safety plan about the Silver Line Phase 1
opening.
There is what's the requirement that we have a system safety plan for this. We have to sort of work with the contractor. And we also have developed the entire activation plan. Bob, Jim, involved with that. If we talk about testing and everything else, lay that all out to the airport authority. At a point in time, and they believe it's going to turn over to us, we don't just go in operation next day. There'll be a period of time, maybe a few months, where we run the operation without passing. We'll have drills with first responders, our own training with regard to our folks, so that we'll keep familiarization, as well as with the following system safety, before we come to the board and say it's ready to act for the professional training. So, Rob, do you want to have a run out?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand, and I agree with you, Mr. Downs. I've been involved with another property, three different separate line openings, and I agree with you that extra attention has to be paid to those startup services. Just the unfamiliarity of the territory, the communications, operators, how they, you know, just react to the different physical characteristics of the property. So we are paying very specific attention to that. The safety is integrated into the rail activation plan, so you know we've developed that portion of it into there. It is a stepwise approach to implementing service during the period of time during what's you know considered our operational readiness testing period. It's an incremental plan, so that we're not just immediately you know running the operational headways out there. So you know we take a very stepwise approach to that. In addition, while the testing is going for the Silver Line testing, on our own right of way, we obviously have command and control. There are our operators on the trains. They're under our command and control for those. We have a very specific test plan as we go into the new Silver Line infrastructure, into the new right of way. We have a very specific test plan for that. Those operators, again, they're WMATA operators on WMATA trains under our control. And you know, working very closely with M1, their contractor, to you know ensure that the operational guidelines are the same as ours. That was one of the things that we you know just even to the extent that the numbering of the rule book, as we look at a special rule book, the numbering is the same, so that there's no confusion, you know, down to that level, recognizing that. So, you know, we do look at it very closely. Again, you know, taking the incremental approach. I think we'll be fine, and again, it isn't integrated into the rail activation plan.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I think we could move to adjourn and turn it over to the finance chair.